Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also interact with us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We will cover an awful lot over the next 60 minutes. We'll continue to get your reaction on Pat Shurmur's introductory presser from Friday. Paul and I will give you our thoughts, what stood out to us about that. But we're going to start right off the top on the Giants' new defensive coordinator, and that is James Betcherin, to provide more insight on what Brecher will bring to the New York Giants. We're now joined by Darren Urban from azcardinals.com, who has covered the Cardinals for nearly two decades. Darren, Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing very well. Well, we're intrigued by this hiring from Pat Shurmur that he's bringing in James Betcher, who you're very familiar with, serving under Bruce Arians in the same capacity as defensive coordinator. I think, Darren, when you look at the statistics, that Cardinals defense run by Betcher has been up there over the last few seasons, a very aggressive defense. What has stood out to you about James Betcher's philosophy as a defensive coordinator?
Well, I think you nailed it pretty well there. He's been very aggressive over the last few years. I will say that this year it seemed like they backed off a little bit in terms of the man-to-man coverage and played a little bit more zone on the back end than they had in the past. But I think that was looking at a couple of different personnel issues and the fact that they didn't have to blitz as much. I mean, one of the things that this defense saw over the years that Bruce Arians was here, and starting with Todd Bowles as the defensive coordinator, then James Betcher taking over when Bowles went to the Jets, was the fact that they blitzed an awful lot early, in part because they did not have the pass rush when you just brought four guys. And what ended up happening was they were able to build that up. Chandler Jones arrived in a trade. They drafted for Marcus Golden. They were able to get more of a pass rush with four, and that allowed James Betcher to be a little bit more flexible on the back end, do some different things. But in general, you're talking about a guy who he's loyal to his players. He defends them a lot. He puts them in good spots. It didn't hurt that he had one of the best cornerbacks in the league and Patrick Peterson able to follow around the best receiver. And that made a big difference. And obviously Chandler Jones probably deserved to be in some conversation for Defensive Player of the Year the way he played this year. So it always helps to have the players, but I do think that, you know, Betch is a very good defensive coordinator, and it does not surprise me that he landed on his feet after the change in coaches here.
Now, let me take his defensive sets and try to translate them with a little bit of tracing paper to the Giants. I see that Vernon becomes the Chandler Jones, the guy who's basically a stand-up defensive end, if you will, but can play a variety of different roles in that spot. I see Landon Collins kind of being the Buchanan guy, who is the hybrid linebacker, strong safety type. I see Dominic Rogers-Cromartie also being one of those versatile guys like Bubba Baker, who could play a little slot, he could play outside, he could play some safety. And I also see the role of Patrick Peterson being filled by Janoris Jenkins. I think one of the reasons he took this job, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Giants were the first interview he got, and he took the job right away without even going to the Tennessee Titans or any other team. I'm suspecting he sees those guys as translatable to what he was doing with the Cardinals.
Well, I haven't had a chance to talk to Betch, so I don't want to jump to many conclusions. But I will say that, again, players ultimately make the coach, and it doesn't really matter what your scheme is. And obviously the Giants have a lot of talented players on defense. You know, I know there are times that it didn't translate last year for whatever reason. But I do agree that if you're a coach and you want to go to a place where – you're going to be able to be successful, you know, again, the names you rattled off, you know, those are some good players. Now, whether there's a direct translation, I'll be curious to see. I mean, we're kind of seeing it on the opposite end out here with Steve Wilks, the new head coach, whose background is in a 4-3, and this team has played in a 3-4 base for a while. I mean, that's what Betch was working with here, was a 3-4 base. Obviously, the Giants have been a little bit different. Do you play with that a little bit more? Do you stick because of the personnel? Do you play out of a 4-3 base? And I know in today's NFL, it's, you know, whatever your base defense is isn't as important. But again, like you mentioned, Landon Collins, you know, the way this defense morphed over the years. I mean, Dale Buchanan, he was a safety in college and drafted as a safety, but he's a linebacker. I mean, in this defense, he was a linebacker, and they would still use three other safeties on the field at times with Dale Buchanan. So, you know, is do you want to move Landon Collins, you know, completely away from being a safety, or might he just kind of move around a little bit more on the back end? I'll be curious to see. That's one of the examples that I think of, you know, when you bring that stuff up.
Well, I tell you what, again, you watch the team all the time. I only saw them when the Giants went out to Arizona and I was there on the sideline.
Right.
I've since watched the tape again. What I saw is that he loves to use a lot of dime packages, but he interchanges his safeties with his linebackers, and they play a lot like linebackers, and they'll blitz a lot like linebackers. This is not a guy who goes to the standard dime package and wants all those DBs playing defensive back. He morphs them.
Yes, and I don't think there's any question. I mean, one of the things that the Cardinals have done over the years, especially with their back seven, are finding guys that are super flexible, that can play the different spots that you were mentioning. They've loved that. That's been a philosophy here, period. Obviously, Betcher was in the middle of all that. But they clearly, especially when you're in situations where, you know, the other team is going to pass, it's not an obvious rundown or even a possible rundown, to have all those defensive backs on the field. I mean, if you're counting Buchanan as a potential defensive back, which, again, you know, kind of go back and forth with the debate sometimes. But, I mean, there have been times when they've had as many as seven defensive backs out there because of the flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, they love the fact that, hey, if you have a couple of safeties like a Tyrann Mathieu or a Buda Baker, guys that can are dynamic even rushing the passer, and you put them both on the field at the same time, then all of a sudden the offense doesn't have any idea if there is a blitz, and if there turns out to be a blitz, what safety might be coming. I think they love that here as a philosophy, and I think that's what James Betcher loves to do.
Well, I mean, and that was what Pat Shurmur also laid out as we're talking with Darren Urban from azcardinals.com. In his introductory presser, Darren, one of the things Pat Shurmur said that was appealing about James Betcher was he can work with multiple different formations. You know, and you mentioned this earlier. You said, well, listen, the base was a 3-4, but in today's NFL, you have to be able to adapt to different personnel and adapt to different offensive schemes. So, you know, you hinted at how he utilized the secondary, but how much did they even move the personnel around in terms of the front line with respect to a guy like Chandler Jones and what perhaps James Betcher could do in moving around Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul?
You know, in terms of Chandler Jones, you know, he was a guy that clearly they moved into some different spots. He hasn't moved here as much as he used to do in New England, which I think works fine. I mean, they might swap sides or bring him on a stunt once in a while. But generally, Chandler Jones was playing on the outside. I know when you start talking about up front guys, the way they've done it here, especially this past year after Calais Campbell left as a free agent, they got very much into the rotation up front rather than having – I mean, Calais Campbell obviously would play a bunch of snaps.
Sure.
Once he left, they got to much more of a rotating defensive line. They didn't have necessarily that superstar or star up front. So they moved in terms of rotating those guys. That's what they did. And once you start looking at that, it made a little bit more sense to have, you know, a Chandler Jones kind of stay on the outside. He was so effective coming off the edge. And they had to do some things differently this year, too, because Marcus Golden had a season-ending knee injury during the fourth game of the season. So they lost a significant pass rusher, a guy who led them in sacks in 2016, and that was something Betcher had to overcome this past year too, was because of losing Marcus Golden. So I would say that up front, you know, I think the Giants have the potential of even having better pieces to work with than the Cardinals did, and I'll be curious to know, you know, maybe what Betcher does with those new toys.
He's 39 years old. and I don't know him from a hole in the wall, because all I've seen of him as a person is what I've seen on the YouTube videos when he's given some interviews. I'd like you to tell us, if you can, a little bit about him as a guy. What makes him relatable to the players? How disciplined can he get if he needs to be, keeping guys in order, maybe getting guys back in line? Communication-wise, how clear is he on what it is that he wants to do? Do players have much trouble understanding the scheme that he's putting forth?
I will say I was lucky enough to get a chance to know James Betcher pretty well. I mean, I think he's incredibly driven to be very good at his job. I don't think what he puts forward is confusing or would be difficult to understand or comprehend. He did deal with a lot of strong personalities on this defense, but from everything I was able to tell, it all went fairly smoothly. And obviously, it's tough for it not to go smoothly when you start looking at, you know, some of the stats they were able to put up. Now, I know that last year, early in the season, there were some bumps in the road defensively as guys tried to kind of find their way. There had been some moving pieces. You lost Calais Campbell from the year before. You lost Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger. You know, Tyrann Mathieu was still trying to come back to full speed after that second knee injury he had a couple years ago, and I think they were still trying to find some things. And they had some personnel issues in terms of, you know, who they brought in. They decided to start Justin Bethel at cornerback, and he struggled mightily. And once they made a change to Tremont Williams, that made a big difference too. But I think in overall, I think, you know, James Betcher he had earned a lot of trust, obviously from Bruce Arians when he got promoted when Todd Bowles left. He did interview for the head coaching job here, and I do think that was a warranted interview. So that was something that, you know, he'd obviously proven some of those leadership skills and some of those communication skills. Now, for me, you know, New York is a different place. You know, New York is a lot different than Arizona.
It is.
And so I'll be curious. I mean, I think Betch is really good at his job. He's also worked in Indianapolis and Arizona. Now he goes to New York. You know, does that change anything? Does that what you're around change anything for him? We'll have to see. But I really don't have any doubts that he's going to succeed, because that's the kind of guy he is. He just kind of he pushes himself forward to do this, and this is something he was born to do. He's very much a football guy, and I think ultimately he will have success there.
Well, and as you mentioned, Bruce Arians was with him going back to the Indianapolis Colts days, so they had an established relationship. And, Darren, that really brings me to my next question. When you have an offensive-minded head coach, like the Giants do in this case, similar to Arizona, you know, you always look to, well, who's going to set the tone on defense, the defensive coordinator, which is such an important hiring. And I know you alluded to this a little bit. You said Bruce Arians trusted James Betcher. Now, they had a long-established relationship, but, you know, how do you think the dynamics will play out in terms of Pat Shurmur entrusting James Betcher to say, hey, you could go off on your own island, you can handle the defense, and I can focus on the offense? You know, how do you think that's going to translate from Arizona to New York?
Well, I mean, I can only suppose. I mean, to be honest, I've never met Pat Shurmur, and I don't know how he's going to operate it as a head coach. I can only go by, you know, what I saw from Bruce Arians, who was very much about grooming his younger coaches if he could help it, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because he was an offensive guy. And you know, there was no hesitation for him when Todd Bowles got the head coaching job with the Jets to go with James Betcher. And mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of conversation around here of, you know, if Bowles is leaving, is there really an obvious replacement on staff, or does he go out and get at the time a Wade Phillips or something like that? And Bruce Arians turned to Betcher right away. So, you know,
I think we may have lost Darren there.
We did.
Right on point. We were talking to him about James Betcher, the Giants' new defensive coordinator, and we were asking him about the leadership component of James Betcher and whether or not Bruce Arians, just like Pat Shurmur, would entrust him to say, hey, you handle the defense and there's no concern.
Well, it is interesting in that Betcher, at this point, 39 years old, has been the DC with the Cardinals for 3 years. So that means he was 36 when he got that job. And, yeah, to a lot of people, that's going to raise eyebrows because they'll say, well, where's the experience factor? Especially if you're going to run a complex defense, which Bowles did when he was in Arizona.
And the continuity that was achieved on defense, I think, says a lot. The fact that you lose an experienced defensive coordinator in Todd Bowles, you bring up James Betcher, and there's really not a drop-off. Because, as I mentioned, and the numbers show it, Paul, this has been a very consistent Cardinals defense. Now, granted, Darren mentioned you got to give credit to the personnel. Every good coach needs great personnel.
No doubt.
But I think it does say something about the fact that, and he even mentioned, they lost some free agents. They didn't necessarily have the entire roster stay as is, yet the numbers, the stats, the production remained even. So that was something that I think was extremely noticeable that he brought up. All right, so we got Darren Urban back. And Darren, I know you were in the midst of answering the question about the leadership component that you saw to James Betcher and the fact that they were so high on him in replacing Todd Bowles as defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and just to finish up the thought, I mean, I guess to me, I mean, when Bowles left, this was a team that had a couple of solid seasons, not only defensively, but overall. And, you know, Betcher came in and, you know, the first year he's defensive coordinator, not only is Bruce Arians trusting him to do that, but that was the year that the Cardinals ended up going to the NFC Championship game with a very good defense. And in fact, in all, some of the numbers that the Cardinals posted defensively ended up being better after Bowles left. So, you know, I think there was a lot of trust on Bruce Arians' part. I wouldn't be surprised if Pat Shurmur talked to Bruce Arians and Bruce Arians gave a big thumbs up. He's, you know, all I can go is by what James Betcher produced here as a defensive coordinator, and it was some very good football. And if they had had some better offense, especially this year, you know, things might have been a little different, even with, you know, whether James Betcher could end up being a head coach already, just because I think if the team would have had a little bit more success, people would have noticed him even more.
So the fact that you said a little bit earlier that you thought that the interview for the head coaching job was legit, but ultimately he didn't get it. Was the age a factor there? Do you think the fact that he's only 39 and had been a coordinator for 3 years, do you think that may have been one of the reasons why? Because from everything Bruce Arians said in public was that he wanted Betcher to get the job. I mean, there seemed to be a lot of support.
Well, I don't know exactly how that all went down in terms of why they decided to go with Steve Wilks over Betcher or anybody else for that matter. Obviously, they are very happy with taking Steve Wilks. I don't know if it might have been the chance to go in a slightly different direction and rather than just continue out where the Cardinals have been going the last couple of years. I'm not sure. Obviously, overall, the record the last couple of years, while wasn't terrible by any stretch of the imagination, wasn't quite the success that anybody had hoped around here. And there is a certain feeling of a fresh start with Carson Palmer retiring. You don't know what's going to happen with Larry Fitzgerald. You know, maybe it was just a question of going in a different direction. I can't really say. They haven't really talked about, you know, why they didn't choose the other guys. It was just what they talked about in terms of why they picked Steve Wilks.
Darren, last one for me. I know you hinted at this a little bit earlier in terms of his personality, and you said that he has no problem disciplining players and getting along with them. I mean, what jumped out to you, though, about his personality in terms of how he meshed with players? Because we always try to label guys as players' coaches or disciplinarians. I mean, where do you draw the line in terms of where James Betcher stood on that front?
I mean, if I had to kind of characterize it, I would say he's a little bit more of a player's coach in terms of he's very into supporting them. He's very into defending them. You know, he's going to talk about their good sides. I'm not saying he won't tell them behind closed doors what they're doing wrong or be critical of them, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to stand up in front of a podium and get critical of players. He's going to talk about what they're doing well and why they continue or why they could get better or all those kinds of things. So I would kind of put it in that realm. I think he feels like if I support these guys, if I give them the tools to be successful and then I give them the support, then that's where the success is going to come from.
Final question for me, Darren. And, again, I know this is very premature, but I don't know. What is the Cardinals' salary cap situation? And without getting into specific names, because I know you can't, we can't either, how likely is it that because of a salary cap crunch, there may be some defensive players from Arizona who might want to follow Metcher over to the Giants?
Well, I mean, that's always a possibility. I mean, anytime you start talking about a coach going from one team to another, could somebody follow along? I mean, that's, everybody's been talking about it with, you know, the Vikings and what could happen with the quarterbacks.
It's a natural question. It really is,
yeah.
Sure.
And so, and would I rule it out? I absolutely wouldn't rule it out. But, I mean, you guys have been around this sport long enough to know, and so am I. Ultimately, the money talks. And
yeah.
Would a player want to follow James Betcher? That's possible. Are the Giants going to pay him, that person, the most money or give him the best opportunity? You know, we'll see on that.
Sure.
Absolutely. Well, Darren Urban, kind enough to give us a few minutes from azcardinals.com. Darren, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so there you have it, the outlook for James Betcher, what he did in Arizona in terms of his personality, in terms of his scheme, and how he utilized the Cardinals' personnel and how that will translate over the Giants is going to be something to watch as we get closer to OTAs, free agency, and all that other good stuff.
I don't know where he is right now. I know the other day on Friday when Pat Shurmur had his press conference, he had said that he knew a lot of the assistants that he had brought in could not make it in and had not been here in New Jersey. So I don't even know if Betcher has arrived at the facility yet. I mean, perhaps later on we'll get a chance to see him walking around or not. I don't know. I'm certainly anxious to talk to him. I would hope that the Giants get their full staff rounded out within the next week or so. I mean, there's still a Super Bowl to be played. There's certainly the possibility, as we know, there are some slots still open that maybe, you know, does involve some of the folks who are still busy working.
Of course,
that's,
yeah.
That's absolutely possible. So my suspicion is within the first few days after the Super Bowl, maybe, just maybe, the whole staff will be put together, and then we'll have a chance to talk to these folks, because I'm sure the Giants don't want to do a piecemeal thing.
No. Well,
they'll want the media to meet everybody at once.
And if you remember, when Ben McAdoo finalized his staff, the Giants just had one formal announcement where they laid out the entire staff. They
and then we got to meet them all.
In piecemeal. So
sure.
I'm assuming perhaps something similar like that will take place. But if memory serves me correctly, Paul, we didn't get to formally talk to all of the assistants until the spring started. They didn't have individual pressers.
It was at the beginning of the off-season program.
Correct.
We were invited into the field house where each one of the guys was lined up at a station and we could talk to whoever
we liked. But I guess my point is I'm not anticipating anything like that happening over the course of February before
the team. No, it'll be a few weeks down the road.
Exactly. But yeah. Obviously, when the Giants make it official, we will certainly be able to digest it and break it all down. But James Betcher is official, and that's why we had Darren Urban on to
tell us
about what he could perhaps bring to the New York Giants. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Oren's in Virginia. Oren, what's happening?
How you guys doing today?
Hi.
Doing all right, Oren. What do you got for us?
I would like to talk about the new coach and stuff. I don't really know really much about him. I thought he did a really good job with the Vikings offense and stuff because I wasn't really high on like Ben McAdoo and stuff. Honestly, I personally didn't think they should have fired Tom Coughlin. I felt like he should have lost his job before Tom Coughlin because I felt like if Tom Coughlin had what Ben McAdoo had, we probably would have went a little farther in the playoffs and stuff like that. And also, Tom Coughlin, he's old school. He believes in running the ball, and I believe in that too, even though I'm young. And, I also believe talk about the draft too. I also believe that we should draft a quarterback at two if nobody wants to trade for the picks. It's one thing if someone offers a whole bunch of picks, first round picks, like a RG3 kind of trade thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't, I think we should get a quarterback. I know you got people are saying Davis Webb, but I believe I'd rather have two good quarterbacks competing, and then you can trade one of them eventually. Because Troy Aikman back in the day, I remember he was telling a story about how Jerry Jones, he was the first, they drafted another quarterback the next year right after him, another first-round quarterback. I think that's right. Paul probably would know that because, you know, that was his time. But,
Boy, we're really, that's a subtle zinger there by you, Oren.
That's okay.
Very
that's
nicely
okay.
executed.
Was
on
that
your
around
part.
The time that Steve Walsh came out?
It may have been. I was going to look it up for clarification.
Yeah,
in terms
but
of
I want to. I want to just make sure I got you right on this. So you'd rather have the boatload of picks if you can make the trade, which is what Lance and I have suggested. strongly suggested, by the way. But if they can't come up with the proper price, you'd rather take a QB than take Saquon Barkley.
Yes.
Understood. Yes, I don't know that I'd go there, but I understand. The point is you want to make the trade first if you can get the shopping cart of picks. And I think that's, to me, that is clearly the number one priority.
And think about this, though. Remember, people were saying how Ryan Nassib was going to be good and all that. And I remember, I don't know what that lady was that used to come in. And she's like, I think Ryan Nassib is going to be the future. And he's not even on a team right now. I'm just saying this is better. Because I don't want to have to go through like what other teams go through where they have to find a quarterback. And we got to bring all these quarterbacks in. I'd rather have two good quarterbacks. If Davis West comes out, it'd be great. And he's better than Josh Rosen, and we can just trade Josh Rosen. And we're winning anyway. I feel like we're still winning anyway because people don't want – there's a quarterback-driven league, and I feel like people are going to want a quarterback. And honestly, I also think we need to really get a lot of offensive linemen.
That could be addressed. That could also be addressed in free agency,
it
too.
Can be.
So you have to see what happens in free agency. I don't think you necessarily have to wait for the draft to address the offensive line.
And I think you're going to get some offensive linemen. Both Gettleman and Shurmur have indicated very strongly that that is their top priority.
Well, and we brought this up on the program. I appreciate the phone call, Aaron, that
Gettleman, during his time
in Carolina, has drafted offensive linemen in the middle rounds. He's also gone
no
after
lower
some free
than four.
Agents.
No lower than four.
So when you take that into consideration, he is worked in a variety of ways to address the offensive line. It would not be a stunner if that's the manner in which he chose to go in terms of helping out the Giants' offensive line. I'm looking actually at the Cowboys' draft, and I don't see another quarterback that was taken high in the vicinity of Troy Aikman or the years following. So I'm not exactly sure what story Aikman was referring to. He may have been bringing up another team and not necessarily talking about the Cowboys. No, I was just
sometimes,
curious about
sometimes
that.
Sometimes at my old age, the senility sets in, and my memory's not great either. What
well,
year
I have
was
the,
Walsh?
I have the Cowboys' draft
what,
history
what
year, up,
though,
for
me. What year was Walsh there? Do you know?
I can look that up.
In the meantime, let's go to the next call. CJ from the Bronx, you're up on the program. Hello.
How you doing, guys?
Hi.
Good afternoon. I'm calling because I really want depth at the defensive line. I understand when trading the number two picks, it is a good idea. Get more depth, get more players. Bradley Chubb is a stud.
Yeah,
he wants to be the best defensive line, period. Giants need to get back to the trenches, period.
Mm-hmm.
Second round, we could get the Western Michigan offensive tackle. He's a solid guy. He uses arms too much for me. Point of attack needs to be used for a shoulder. Bradley Chubb, he just wants to be that dude. If we trade down, I'd be happy. But if we get Bradley Chubb, I'd be even more happier. I don't want to even talk about a quarterback. If we have a quarterback right here just wants to get better, we have to give him a chance.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? You know what I love about what you said about Chubb? And philosophically speaking, and this is why I'm a little hesitant about Barkley, because Football 101, the George Young philosophy says that you don't draft a running back that high because of durability concerns and longevity concerns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Barkley's a special talent, and I think that if you have enough on the offensive line, if you can retool the line going in, you certainly have to consider him. I could understand it, and I might even go that way. But Football 101 says if you're at the number two pick, if you're that high in the draft, okay, and you don't have a need for one of the core franchise positions, we've talked about those, left tackle, cover corner, pass rusher, quarterback, you draft the next best guy available in the front seven of the defense. That is the standard Football 101 philosophy. So going that route, then he makes a lot of sense by saying if the Giants aren't going to take a QB and they feel that they've got all of the core positions already on their roster, Chubb would be the next best guy to take because he's the top of the front seven on defense that would be available on the board.
Well, but also the philosophy could also be that Barkley's the best player available, period, on the board. And
again,
therefore,
how special is he?
They would rather just take the best player available as opposed to positional need, which you're inferring.
It's how special is he, and do you have the pieces here to allow him to succeed? That's the question that I'm trying to wrestle with, and I won't be able to wrestle with until after free agency is already underway.
Well, because keep in mind, Orleans Darkwa was a free agent, Shane Vereen. the only guy is Wayne Gallman, essentially. So things may drastically change with the roster, where there may be a need and a good value case to be
no
made.
No question.
For Barkley. That's why I said, I know we sound like a broken record. I've personally said this. I know Paul is more outside of the quarterback, but you can make an argument for taking a QB at the second overall pick. You make an argument for Barkley. You make an argument for trading down. All of those are reasonable options as it stands right now.
You know what I love about this, though, caller, and I really appreciate this very much, as we're getting closer and closer to the draft. No, it's a great question. It's a logical comment. And I think what we're finding, Lance, more and more people on the call on this show, as we get closer to the draft, who are saying, you know what, maybe we shouldn't take the quarterback. Maybe we should trade the boatload of picks. When we first suggested that, I know I first suggested it months ago, I got slammed by the fan base. And I'm getting more and more people now who understand the wisdom.
Well, stockpiling picks is extremely valuable, and appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for chiming in on the conversation. So I agree. You look at some other teams, what they've done. I mean, the Cowboys-Vikings trade comes to mind with Herschel Walker, the Rams-Redskins trade with RG3. You know, there have been teams that have been able to capitalize in terms of volume. I'm not saying talent, but in terms of getting more options to then try to improve your team for the short term as well as the long term. I did look it up. Steve Walsh was a supplemental pick.
That's why
he was not showing up.
Okay.
So he was right in 1989 as a supplemental pick, the same year as Aikman, but he was not in the regular draft.
So maybe I'm not as senile as some people think I am.
Well, I wasn't saying that you were senile. I mean, we always like you to pat yourself on the back every opportunity that you have.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll never turn down that opportunity. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. How about Ron in Georgia? Ron, welcome aboard. What do you got?
What's going on, Lance Paul?
Hello.
Long time, man.
Doing all right, Ron.
I got to say that I am nervous about this second overall pick. I personally like Davis Webb, and I'd like to tell some of my Giants friends how quickly we forget that after the Senior Bowl last year, Davis Webb improved his stock immensely. And I sat back and looked up Eli's draft profile compared to Davis Webb. Davis Webb had the arm talent like Eli had the arm talent. They both came from schools where they didn't have a lot of help around them, so to speak. Davis Webb's really only knock was playing in the spread offense and pushing the ball, being accurate outside the numbers. He was a little shaky. Other than that, he was a great pickup. I feel like he's going to be the future. And you can't teach the willingness to learn and study that a lot of quarterbacks coming out recently have had that problem.
Yeah.
I'm a Penn State fan through and through, so my evaluation of Barkley is kind of like it's biased. I'm Barkley.
Understandable.
Barkley.
Yeah.
That's but, okay. That's it. Hey, you saw him do so many great things. You should feel that way.
And if Cleveland is Cleveland, and they take Josh Allen number one.
No,
well,
you don't.
Remember, Cleveland, Ron, Sam. Cleveland also, as I brought this up on the show, Cleveland's also got the fourth overall pick. If Cleveland is wise, and you got John Dorsey, and they love Barkley, you take Barkley at one, and then you get your quarterback at four, because there's a few quarterbacks that you could argue could be taken with the fourth overall pick. So we're talking about Barkley being available at two. For all we know, he's not even on the board anymore.
Yeah, that it's very possible. That could happen.
That is true, but I feel like Cleveland taking Barkley at number one is just Cleveland being Cleveland. The knock I had on Cleveland.
Well, but Ron, you think highly of Barkley. But wait a minute, Ron, you just said you love Barkley, so now you're going to criticize if Cleveland takes him number one?
This is my reasoning. It's because Cleveland's always got the quarterback that they love. And within the recent years, all the kind of analytics they were doing, they're always trading out of it and settling for a quarterback. If Cleveland likes a quarterback, they need to take the quarterback.
Yeah, quite honestly, too. And let me ask you this. From someone who's watched Penn State, I guess you saw every game this year. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you, because I have not done the workup on Barkley. All I saw was that when I ever saw him on TV this year, he looked pretty dynamic, okay? But I haven't done a tape workup on him. I have heard from some folks who have. They have said to me, if you want to put a criticism on Barkley, it's that he does not have great field vision, and there are times when he doesn't run to the hole, that he runs into traffic, that he might hesitate, he might pick the wrong lane to run through, and that would be the one question that people would have on drafting him that high, because despite his impact talent, he will not always make the play that he should make. Is that fair based on your assessment?
I don't feel like it's fair just because of the simple fact that with the sanctions, Penn State had a problem with offensive line. So I don't think it's more of he's not hitting the hole. It's he's more patient in the terms of let me see where it's going to open up at. And they ran a zone read type of offense, so there wasn't really no hole designation for him to run through anyway. So I don't think that it's really a fair assessment to say he didn't have the vision.
Okay.
Because when he was in traffic, he was getting out of traffic, and it's 90 yards to the house. So I don't have a knock on Barkley.
Okay.
And my only reasoning for drafting Barkley is, and I've heard you say it plenty of times, is he could block. I hate these running backs that come out and they can catch out the backfield. Oh, they might be a good downhill runner. But all of them need to work on pass pro.
Right.
With Barkley, you have the most complete running back coming out of the draft.
Yeah, he's got a skill set. There's no question about that.
Well, and that's important because they're not going to trust you to stay on the field on passing down situations if they don't feel that you can pass protect. We saw that with some of the development of some of these younger running backs. Paul Perkins did not get on the field until late in the season his rookie year because they needed to entrust that he could pick up the blitz.
Yep.
So it's extremely important. And appreciate the phone call, Ron. Thanks so much for weighing in here.
Thank you.
On Big Blue Kickoff Live, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Mike in Fort Myers. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Got 2 points that I want to discuss with you guys. One is the defensive coordinator and the possible switch to a 3-4. And the other happens to be something that the previous caller mentioned about Barkley. I've got family friends who say, look, you look through the NFL and how many Penn State offensive linemen do you see? And you virtually see no one. So they said Barkley really made his own holes and that he's a really, really good player. That's just a comment that I want to pass on. One of the things that I did a few weeks ago is before David Deals and Russ signed off, had a question that I asked them was, could the Giants switch to a 3-4? And David thought that that would really, really be very, very hard to do because he didn't think that, A, we had the linebackers to do the job, that they just weren't fast enough. And he worried a little bit about the defensive ends he didn't name specifically, but he was saying that the job of the defensive end is to fold everything into the nose tackle, into the middle, and the linebackers take them up. So what do you guys think about that?
If I may, I'm going to jump on this real quick because – when you hear 3-4, this is not the Parcells-Belichick 3-4 of the 80s that we're talking about. And first of all, let me just say this. Teams this past year in the NFL played nickel 60% of the time.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And okay. Arizona only played that base about 30% of the time.
So, your base defense is not your primary defense anymore. It's called the base, but it's not your primary. That's first. Second, the way that Beecher, Betcher?
Betcher,
I got to make sure I get this Betcher right when I talk to him.
You Betcher.
The way that Betcher ran his defense against the Giants this past year, go back and look at the tape. I believe it was like on 8 of the first 11 plays, he ran a different look along the defensive front. He'll have 3 guys, 4 guys, 5 guys, 6 guys on the line of scrimmage at any given time. The reason they call it a 3-4 is only because there may be 3 guys on that line who might have their hand on the ground. There might be 2 guys on that line who have their hand on the ground. But the other guys are standing up. For example, Chandler Jones only dropped back off the line of scrimmage once in that whole game. He was a stand-up defensive end or a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end the entire game and dropped back into coverage once. And yet he's being termed a linebacker. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes, I do.
It's not the 3-4 that we remember from the 80s. The 3-4s the teams are playing today are hybrids. It's a term being used to the hands in the dirt as much as anything. It's almost a false name.
Do we have the personnel?
Vernon's Chandler Jones. Olivier Vernon is Chandler Jones.
Well, and here's the other thing, Mike. Dalvin Tomlinson played in a 3-4 at Alabama. Okay, so he has experience. Also, Snacks played in a 3-4 with the
but
Jets.
But they're the nose tackle. And yeah. David Deal did not see that as a problem position.
Okay.
He saw the problem.
Well, the linebackers, and here's my response to that, Mike. Jonathan Casillas, Keenan Robinson, and Devon Kennard are all free agents. How do we know what the linebacking core looks
you
like?
You don't.
Do you know what the linebacking core looks like?
No, he did not, and that was one of his concerns, that we didn't have enough speed in the linebacking position.
No, but Mike, that's my point. But Mike,
3-4 effective.
But Mike, my point is, if we don't know what the linebacking core looks like for 2018, then maybe they cater their signings to address the 3-4.
Sure.
So the way we're talking about the linebacking core right now, until free agency and the draft comes about, it's impossible to speculate whether or not they have enough speed because we don't know what the linebacking core looks like.
Yeah, Mike, you can be sure that now that they've got Betcher in here and he's going to run a hybrid attack, you can be sure that they're going to tailor their personnel to the stuff that he wants to do. And quite frankly, I believe Robinson was on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
Kennard's an unrestricted free agent. Casillas is an unrestricted free agent.
They're all three are free agents.
So
yes.
There's a chance that none of those guys are back, and they replace them with quicker, faster kinds of guys. The other thing to keep in mind, and we had the Arizona Cardinals writer on just a short time ago during the program, when I said to him, Betcher plays a lot of dime. And he even said sometimes seven defensive backs. And what he'll do is he'll cheat by having at least two of those defensive backs not play your typical secondary role, but by having them play pseudo linebacker roles. That's what he does, especially if he's in a sub package. So to be perfectly frank with you, you don't need a laundry list of linebackers to play the kind of scheme that he plays. So try not to get lost in this 3-4 terminology, because that would be a real mistake when you're talking about this guy who plays a real hybrid and a very much, a morphing type of defense, where guys are not in their traditional old pegs that you and I grew up with.
And it even relates to the Giants. I mean, every time we talked about Spags' 4-3 scheme, people would worry about the linebackers. And the question is, how many times were three linebackers on the field?
Yeah.
So, you know, if most defenses are playing the nickel, and if you look at Arizona's breakdown, as I mentioned, they played the 3-4 about 30% of the time. Rest of the time, they were with the extra defensive back on the field. Mm-hmm. So how many times are you going to have four linebackers on the field? That's my big question.
Right.
Well, David's point was that you do need good linebackers to get
Absolutely.
A good pass rush, because you're constantly changing that variable. Who's rushing? Who's dropping back into pass coverage?
Well, no one's going to disagree with David's point, because you need talent at any position to be able to make things work. And I'm sure the Giants will address the linebacker position in a way that Betcher wants them to. I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't think big picture right now you should be concerned about the linebacking core, because we just don't know how it's going to look. And, Mike, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the phone lines. Jeff's in Atlanta. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, Lance Paul, how y'all doing, man?
Doing all right, Jeff.
Hi.
Yeah, man.
It's good to be on the call. It's been a while. But the thing I was going to say, man, look, we need to tell Giants fans, like, look, we need to take a back burner on the draft, because we got this guy, that guy, this guy. You know, look, first thing we got to do, we got to address free agency. You know what I'm saying? So my thing is, like, hey, maybe I do a good job on the show, and I think, like, hey, maybe you could, you know, maybe in the upcoming shows, we could probably talk about, like, you know, show a list of names or whoever, you know what I'm saying, that could be potential Giants when it comes to the free agency. But I get, you know what I'm saying? So that's my one thing.
A lot of time for that. A lot of time for that.
Yeah.
That's weeks down the road.
Okay. What's that?
That's weeks down the road. Free agency's in the middle of March.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
We'll get to it. I promise you we'll get to it.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? I was just like, you know, because, you know, we got to do it free agency first. I think, you know, a lot of drafting is just a lot of wish list going on anyway. But yeah, man, you know, that's my big thing right there. I think we, you know what I'm saying, like you said, we talked about the draft, like, hey, I think we don't need to make no big changes right now. We got the quarterbacks, we at number two. That's a good spot to be at number two. You could just imagine some of the other teams in the NFL that's trying to get at us for that pick.
Well, you have options. So when you're at number two, you have options. Right. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, so many. So you know, that was my thing, though. You know what I'm saying? I think we just got, you know, I know it's in March, but, you know, maybe you could talk about some more potential free agents. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was trying to get at, though.
All right, Jeff.
I'll let you guys do
appreciate
the
phone call.
Appreciate you guys, man.
Thanks so much for weighing in.
I'm going to do Jeff a solid here. When you're watching the Super Bowl on Sunday, keep an eye on the Patriots' tackles, because Soldier and Fleming, the left tackle and the right tackle, are both free agents. Waddle, who is their swing tackle and their third tackle, is also an unrestricted free agent. The odds of the Patriots signing all three of them, you'd have to think, are probably not great. So watch those three tackles. If Waddle even gets into a game, I know he's been banged up a bit. I'm not even sure if he's going to play. But watch Soldier, watch Fleming. Fleming only making $1.7 million this year, so his price tag, he's not going to go from $1.7 million to $11 million in 1 year. That's not going to happen. He's going to be much cheaper of the two for sure. Watch those fellas if you are a team that is looking to potentially sign a veteran tackle. How's that for a wink-wink?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, an all-pro tackle. It could very well be somebody
just
brought
somebody
in
who's,
for competition
who's
purposes,
good enough
who's a polished veteran.
Get the
yes,
job done.
Exactly, that can take some reps and compete and push other guys that are currently on the roster. But, you know, the one thing I will say, we just don't know what the market's going to look like. And sometimes, I understand you mentioned that it's highly unlikely that the numbers financially are going to skyrocket or jump. But, I mean, we did see that at times last season where a number of teams are in the business of looking for a tackle, they compete with one another, and the money starts to dramatically increase. So
a lot
will depend.
Supply and demand.
And there are a lot of teams that need offensive line help. You know, you can make an argument for nearly every team always needs offensive line help.
Yes.
That's why it's a very difficult position and why every team is determining whether or not they should invest in a young kid or they should rather invest in somebody that has already been through the grind of the NFL.
Should be a very interesting free agent period and also with the draft, because the offensive line, especially the tackles, deeper this year than it was the last couple of years.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the phone lines. Marzin's in Delaware. Marzin, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Paul and Lance?
Hi.
Doing all right, Marzin. What do you got for us?
Oh, it's Marvin. Coach
Marvin, okay. I'm sorry. We got the Z confused with the V. So we're going to correct it. We're going to say Marvin. What's happening, Marvin?
I'm all right. The last caller was talking more about the free agency. That's tough to do when you got 32 teams bidding against one player. So
yep.
It's hard to
trust
about free agency.
It can be tricky.
Yeah, it's a little tricky to talk about that. But the draft, you know what position you're in. And you know the range of players that are going to be in those positions. I think that's why a lot of people talk more about the draft than free agency.
And even that's a guessing game, Marvin. Trust me.
Yeah, it is. It is. But Paul was talking about Davis Webb for the last few weeks. And, you know, what I did is went back and looked at some of his films, because I hadn't really looked at him in a while. Mm-hmm. So I went back and looked at his Cal tape. And, you know, one game I looked at was the preseason game against New England, and found that he's not a bad quarterback. I think he had something there that you can work with.
Yep.
He had some positive throws, some back shoulder throws, which is very difficult for young guys to do in the NFL. And he did those at a rookie. And he got minimal time on the field to do some of those things. So I think we ought to give him a better shot at seeing what he can do.
Marvin, as a coach yourself, I think, you know, it bears to mention that you look at Davis Webb, and if you believe at all that he's a legitimate prospect, and again, Coach Shurmur said on Friday, he used the words outstanding when talking about him, also said flat out, when he was drafted. He considered this guy as a potential starter in the league. If Pat Shurmur is as good a quarterback guru as he is made out to be, and you give him a talent like Davis Webb, who's big and strong and has a heck of an arm and can really wing the ball all over the field and make all the throws, you have to believe that Pat Shurmur can make something really special out of a guy like that, because he's not coming from the ground up. He's going to be working with a guy who's got a lot of clay to mold.
Yes, I agree with that. There's something on him that people haven't really talked about that I noticed, that this guy, he can really run outside the pocket.
Yes.
I mean, he's not a Michael Vick or those types of runners.
He's got some mobility.
He's not a scrambler, but he's got escapability is what I call it.
Yeah, he does. They looked like they ran the option read when they got in the red zone, and he scored a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some there. And people need to give him a shot, and just to outright think we're going to draft a quarterback number two, we're going to have to weigh that with Davis Webb and see what he really
well
has.
And that's why Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman both said the next 3 weeks the whole point is to evaluate the current roster to determine, you know, who they want to consider re-signing and what they currently have. And I just want to read what Pat Shurmur said on Davis Webb. This is exactly the transcript at the press conference. It was the final question at the press conference. He said, quote, good question, because it was about Davis Webb. Quote, we went through the process on Davis Webb. He was referring to when he was in Philadelphia. And he was an outstanding player. We liked how competitive he was. He's got size. He's got a good arm, strength. We felt like he was a guy worthy of being drafted and having a chance to be a starter someday. Again, beyond that, I don't know much about him. There isn't much tape out there on him that I was able to see. And so he's another player that I'm looking forward to getting to know.
You know what, Marvin? Here's the problem. You're not reading the New York papers or listening to New York radio or reading the message boards too much, because they don't want to talk sense like you and I do. We talk too much real football. That's the problem here.
Well, everybody wants what they want, and they're going to put down what they're going to put down. And my thing is, I always tell my people, don't push people down to push yourself up. So, you know, let's see what the other person have equally. And that's what they need to do with him. I realize also he won the MVP in the All-Star game.
Yes, he did.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
So there is something there. I have one more other
real quick
comment.
Yeah.
Before I leave, they're talking about the guy said something about Chubb against Barkley, and some of the stuff he's saying about Barkley is true, even though he's biased. I told you before, my chief is an alumni of Penn State.
Right.
About Penn State's offensive line. They had some injuries early in the year on their offensive line, and they wasn't that really good of an offensive line, and he did a lot of that of his own. But his versatility, you cannot misjudge that. The things that he can do outside of just running the ball is pretty amazing what he can do. And we always talking about, we're going to draft the best available player. Okay, we got Michael Jordan and Sam Bowie on the board.
Well, I don't know if I'd make that type of a comparison, though, Marvin. I think that's an extreme in terms of your basketball analogy. I'd appreciate the phone call. I mean, Saquon Barkley and
let him stay. Let him stay.
No. Saquon Barkley and one of the quarterbacks to me is not necessarily Michael Jordan and Sam.
You got to understand this Michael Jordan lover over here.
No, relax.
No.
My point is, no. It's got nothing to do with my favoritism for Jordan. It has everything to do with the fact that Saquon Barkley and one of the quarterbacks, I don't think, is apples and oranges. Michael Jordan and Sam Bowie is apples and oranges. That to me is an extreme analogy that you threw out there. That was my point.
I think you're misunderstanding the analogy. The analogy is not saying that one is Michael Jordan and the other one is Sam Bowie. That's not my point. My point is the Portland Trailblazers. At the time, they did not pick the best available player. Don't
Correct.
Get me wrong in saying that I'm saying that Barkley is Jordan. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah, they went for the best big man because they were so desperate for a big man.
But to counter that, my argument is on the Giants' board, they may have a quarterback in their mind who is the best player available. And Barkley may not be number one on their list. You at least need to understand that and consider
that.
Yeah,
we don't know that.
That's my point. You can't just say, oh, well, I love Barkley, so he's definitely number one on everyone's board. Not every team is looking at Barkley the same way.
You're definitely correct. But you know what in that same statement, Lance?
every time a team gets on the board, they got the guy they wanted. Is that really, really true?
Not always.
Well, I mean, listen, unless you're a fly on the wall in the draft room, of course
always.
We don't know that. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with that.
You know what's funny, though, Marvin? Usually the Giants system is that they try to cluster together four or five or six players that they believe will be available around the time they're going to pick. Well, when you're picking number two, it's pretty easy to put that cluster together because most of those guys are going to be there.
Absolutely. And, Marvin, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Want to try to squeeze in a few
more people, Marvin,
here as we wrap up. Jay is in Brooklyn. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing all right, Jay.
I'm going to admit, I'm in the draft of quarterback camp, but I agree with you in a way. I think the only other argument is to trade the pick. I think you either draft a quarterback or you trade the pick and get a boatload of picks. I think trying to draft a running back number two, I don't like that idea at all. But I think those are the two ways you do it. So unless the Giants feel that Davis Webb is absolutely the heir apparent, or they don't like the quarterbacks, then trade the pick. I agree with that.
Okay.
But the only thing I have to say is, just one question. What if we're wrong about Davis Webb?
Well, let me ask you this. What if all the teams that knew that Tim Couch was going to be a bust and Jamarcus Russell was going to be a bust and Ryan Leaf was going to be a bust? You know, what if those teams knew that? I mean, you know, taking a gamble. Here's what I'm trying to tell people, just to take this logically. Let me take all my feelings and my knowledge about Davis Webb out of this.
Okay.
Simply put, if you're just going to put a mathematical equation on the board, don't you think that a guy who has tutored under Eli Manning for a full season, has been in a pro camp for a full season, has lived, eaten, breathed, and slept in this facility, and has soaked up everything Eli Manning has had to tell him for a full season, don't you think the chances are, if he's got any talent at all, he's further along than any of these kids who are coming out in the April draft and has a better chance to do something?
I think he's further along, Paul. I don't disagree with that, but all that's saying is that as a guy, he studied more than one of the first round. I mean, at the end of the day, he was still a third round pick.
Well, that is true. But here's the thing. You also know more about him than you do a rookie who's coming out in the draft. Because the guy has been here every day. So not only has he advanced himself a year into professional football by studying, you also know more about him than you do the unknown guy who's coming out in April.
The only thing I'll add to that, Paul, is that Shurmur and Gettleman, though, are brand new. So
Shurmur seems to have a folder on him.
But I'm talking about the time that he was putting in this past season.
He doesn't have that.
Shurmur and Gettleman are not necessarily in line knowing exactly what he did because they just arrived.
Okay, go ahead. This is a good conversation.
Yeah.
That's why I preface this by saying if they know he's the heir apparent, then I have no problem with it.
Okay.
But if he's not, every single pick that they trade for, they're going to be trading back in 2 to 3 years trying to find their quarterback.
Well, you know what? Here's the one thing you have to also take into consideration when you calculate the equation. It sounded to me at the press conference like Pat Shurmur thinks Eli's got at least one season, maybe even two, and
they
even said he wouldn't even put a cap on it beyond that. Eli's contract runs through 2019. Yeah. So to be honest with you, there's nothing preventing him from being the starting quarterback for two more seasons at the least if he proves that he can still function on the field. So
then we're playing with fire there, Paul. I mean, you're talking about going on 40 years old, and that's very dangerous, Paul.
Tom Brady's over 40.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I mean, Jay, you know.
I'm not saying Eli Manning's Tom Brady, but there's been guys over 40 that have played.
Drew
Brees is 39, right?
Yeah, so, I mean,
Eli Manning and Drew Brees either.
But Jay, the point is that there have been quarterbacks that have been productive at least once they're over 40. To your point, though, and this is where I agree with Paul, we don't know the Eli Manning timeline. So you're almost operating under, if this is Eli's last season, you need to have the successor on the roster. So come the start of 2019, you know who you have. The point is, if Eli plays for another 2 to 3 years, that then gives you more time to search for the successor. So if you don't take a quarterback this year, who's to say that you can't draft a quarterback in 19, you can't draft a quarterback in 20, or perhaps you make a trade or sign a free agent? There's
if
other options.
If Webb is not the guy.
Correct, yes. I'm going under the premise that maybe they don't feel Webb is the guy. Yes.
You know, it's entirely possible, though. It's entirely possible, based on Eli's contract, that you won't need that successor to 2020.
We just don't know at this
point. The next guy may not see a snap in 18 or 19, so that's Lance's point. You know what? Here's the thing. The beauty of all of this is all of this is basically, to some degree, a roll of the dice. It is, and it's a great conversation. I mean, you guys know where I stand on it, but it's a great conversation because the fact is none of us know today who's right, who's wrong, and what the odds are going to be of any of these things working out in the way you think they will. And that's the truth.
And, Jay, appreciate the phone call. All we're doing at this point, it was just laying out the options and to see it from a different angle, to say that you have to have the successor on the roster tomorrow when you just don't know how long Eli Manning is going to play.
Look, it's no different than an offensive coordinator who's got to make a call on fourth down and three. And is he going to run it? Is he going to pass it? Is he going to run outside? Is he going to run inside? He's trying to think of the percentages of all the different options and trying to think, okay, which one probably gives us the best chance to succeed? And I'm looking at the evidence in front of me right now, and I'm saying I think that's the best way for the Giants to go. Don't draft the quarterback. Rely on Davis Webb. Groom him. Make him the guy. Eli's going to be around a while. And that's where I'm putting my chips. And that doesn't mean that I'm right, folks, believe me. But here's the deal. If I was going to be wishy-washy, then I shouldn't be in this job. Because my job is to watch, collect information, evaluate based on my knowledge and experience, and then give you a strong, concrete opinion. Because if I'm going to be wishy-washy, then you know what? I might as well be a gardener, an electrician, a doctor, a lawyer. I might as well do something else because there's no reason for me to be here.
I don't want a doctor that's wishy-washy, Paul, so I'd cross that one off the list.
Cross the doctor off.
You better know what you're doing if you're a
but
doctor.
But the point is, if you want to talk to a football analyst and a football historian, which is what I am, I'm going to give you a strong opinion because that's what I'm paid to do.
All right, let's try to squeeze in two more calls here before we wrap up. Scott's in New Mexico. Scott, what's happening?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
How we doing, Scott?
I had a question for you. I know it's fun to speculate about who we're going to draft, but free agency is going to come up first. And my question is just a basic one. There's a couple of players. Earl Thomas comes to mind and Devontae Freeman, who are both free agents, I believe.
Thomas is a free agent, if memory serves me correct. I know there was talk about him speaking to the Cowboys, which you may be referring to, but that was down the road. Earl Thomas, I'm looking at the Seahawks free agents right now. Earl Thomas is not on the list. He is not a free agent.
He is signed through the 18 season.
Yeah, he's actually seeking a long-term contract, which...
That's not surprising.
But that's not a free agent. The point is, if you want to acquire him, it'd have to be a trade or he'd have to be outright released in order to become available.
Right.
Well, my question is, as I said, it's fun to speculate about the draft, but free agency is going to come up first. And I have a basic question, which I can take off the air. Do the Giants have the money available to them to actually look for high-end free agents that do come out? Or the potential scenario where they could pay an Earl Thomas who wants a long-term contract to actually pay him the money that he might want so the Giants can be helped out a little bit more on the defensive side?
Well,
thanks, guys. And
you got it, Scott. I mean, off the top of my head, I don't know what the exact numbers are. I just go based on what Kevin Abrams said right before – you know, the beginning of the offseason, which is that the Giants are in a healthy position, that they don't think that they've got their backs against the wall, where they've got to, you know, do a lot of heavy lifting to free up some room.
There will be several moves made, of course, during the offseason to either redo numbers or, quite frankly, just let guys go. That will happen. The other problem you have right now is it's all about estimates because the salary cap for 2018 has not been officially released
yet. Usually it goes up.
People are guessing it's going to go up several million.
Which has been the trend, yeah.
But until all of that is solidified, and again, that comes up in the second week of March, it's hard to really discuss those numbers because there are things that can happen.
Well, and also look at Dave Gettleman's track record in Carolina in terms of how many splashes he had made. I mean, he locked up a lot of his own guys, you know, in terms of potential free agents. He gave an extension to Cam. He gave an extension to Luke Kuechly. I mean, those were the noticeable contracts, Paul. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily going out and throwing mega bucks at a guy walking in off the street. So I think you need to take that into consideration if you do want to play the game of speculation. Well, you know, if the Giants did have the space, would they go after the guy? Well, look at what Gettleman did in Carolina.
You know, the George Young philosophy on that was always, you know the guys who are in your house better than anybody else, and you know less about the guys who are out of your house than the other guy did who got rid of him. And so if you can look at free agency and say, sometimes the best signings are the guys that you keep rather than the guys you go get.
James is in Virginia. James, what do you got for us?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good night, James.
Great.
This is a question for you, P-Dot.
Sure.
I know you, I think a lot of people sleep on your professional evaluation of these players, especially Giants players. They didn't look at you sometimes as just being a reporter, but I know you know what you're talking about.
I appreciate that.
My question is, if Davis Webb was coming out now, how do you think he ranked amongst the Sam Darnolds and the Josh Allen? And the other guy that I saw the other day at the Senior Bowl, the starting quarterback for the South, I think it was Mike White or something like that.
Yeah, White had a nice game.
Yeah, he did. And I want to know what you thought about that. Because you, like I said, what a lot of people don't know is, you're there with him. You see what everybody don't see. And if you think that, you know, he's good enough or he's progressing well enough under Eli, and I'm sure Pat Shurmur and those guys will see the same and can work with him and get him there. And if that's the case, I don't think we need to draft a quarterback. I don't think we need to draft Barkley neither. As much as I like him, but you can get, like, the running back from Georgia. I think we still need to address that offensive line, probably come down a few slots. And the guy from on the South team, too, I think from Intep.
Did you see? I'm nicknaming him Will Hogmolly Hernandez.
Oh, man. I watched. They got him on YouTube showing, like, him in practice. I mean, he was just crushing people. I mean, they wanted to fight him.
Yeah,
it looks like
he's an eraser. He just knocks guys off the field and out of the play in a heartbeat. He's basically DJ Fluker with more athleticism. The man is just absolutely incredible. And if he's there at pick number 34, second pick of the second round, to
we
me,
gotta get him. Oh,
don't you think? I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, that'd be great. Here's what I'll tell you about. I was asked that question about Davis Webb last week. It might have been on one of the shows you and I did. It's hard to understand that because Davis Webb played 1 year at Texas Tech, played a year at Cal, so he was in different systems.
Yeah, he was with Patrick Mahomes when he was at Texas
right.
Tech. Right.
Yeah. Did not have a full college career, so therefore his college development was certainly stunted because he had the transfer, and then he came out.
Moved around.
And wound up with the Giants. If he had had that extra year in college and had been in the same system the whole time, I don't know what his grade would be. Would he be up there with these guys right now being mentioned in the top five picks of the draft? Maybe. I really don't know the answer. It's too hypothetical because too many things shortchanged the kind of evaluation that you're asking me to give. But I will say this. He's been a pro now for the last, 8 months, 10 months. He's been a pro, you know, studying film as a pro, thinking as a pro, being on the field as a pro with professional coaches and with Eli Manning, the most professional of all quarterbacks. You know, so regardless of what you might have thought of him coming out, if you liked him then at all, you really should like him now because he's had the benefit of all of that extra stuff.
And he didn't run a pro-style offense in college.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's the other thing you got to take into consideration.
Yeah, and I think, from what I saw from Davis Webb, I mean, he looks good to me. And like I said earlier, I think what people are missing is that you guys can see him, you know, studying every day and really wanting to get this thing down. And now, you know, he's starting with a new offense, and so is Eli.
Correct, yeah. So, well, that's another unknown. And here's the other thing you got to keep in mind, James. The work ethic is important. The work ethic is key. Whether or not that translates to the football field, though, right now is still a big question mark because the sample size is non-existent. Davis Webb hasn't been in one regular season NFL game. The only thing we've seen him in is preseason. We've seen him in practice, and we've seen how well he studies and his work ethic. But whether or not that translates to the football field, that remains to be seen. That's what Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman are going to have to determine with another full offseason of him around.
Right. Well, I think and you're right with that, but I think they can just – I'm thinking like you, Pete, maybe – I think I heard you say this, but maybe we can slide down a little bit and hopefully address the offensive line.
Yeah.
And because if we get the good running back, or you know, you still need offensive line because he's going to get beat up, and those 3-4 years of him getting hurt then he's no good. You know,
I tell you what, sign a veteran or two offensive linemen during free agency, keep the two, draft Barkley, go get Will Hernandez in the second round of the draft, and I'm having a pizza party, and you can come over for some spaghetti and meatballs if you like.
I can go with that.
There we go. There's that food analogy. And, James, listen, we're going to let you go on that note. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. A lot of draft talk, a lot of free agency talk on the program. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls. As always, we'll try to address some of your tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running each and every weekday this week at noon Eastern as we will continue to break down Pat Shurmur's arrival as well as James Betcher and what he'll bring to the defensive side of the ball. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.